fourth and final case this afternoon is In Re Conservatorship of, is it Mueller or Miller?
Mueller.
You may approach.
That name is pronounced either Miller or Mueller, depending upon which family we're talking about.
Yes, that's why I asked. That's why
this
I asked.
This is a Mueller.
Again, this is In Re Conservatorship of Mueller. You may proceed.
Thank you. May it please the Court, Your Honors, and Ms. Smith. My name is Clark Grant, and I'm here today representing Cheryl Mueller. She is the daughter-in-law of Lorraine Mueller, who is under a guardianship conservatorship that was ordered out of the County Court of Platte County Probate Court. I'm going to take there's actually two appeals that are consolidated today. I'm going to take the first argument I'm going to make is on the second appeal, which is A14971. In that matter, we've appealed the trial court's decision authorizing the conservator and guardian, or the special conservator and guardian at this point, to sell the real estate that's owned by a corporation known as New Cow Farms Incorporated. That corporation is owned for the most part by Lorraine Mueller. We know she has 85%, and the balance of it seems to be in dispute at this point, but isn't germane to what we're talking about. Yeah. Our position on that, Your Honors, is that the sale of the New Cow Farms real estate is simply not necessary at this point in time for the support and care of Lorraine Mueller, who is now living in a nursing home in Wichita, Kansas. The record will reflect that her care costs about $6,200 a month. The reason it isn't necessary is that the special guardian conservator, Ms. Luke, has already sold other real estate owned personally by Lorraine Mueller to the tune of total sale price.
Is that in the record?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
What's in the record at the trial itself is the values of the property based upon the assessor's information. The court was later asked to approve the sales of the property. That was done, and we've supplemented the record.
Well, so that information was not available at the time the court made the decision that the property should be sold.
True, but
isn't that what we have to look at?
Even if you look at that, Your Honor, that would indicate that there was over $600,000 worth of property. And that's just...
Excluding MuCal.
Excluding MuCal. And remember, that is just the assessor's value. And on farm real estate, we know that it's probably about 70% of what the assessor deems to be.
But wasn't there evidence adduced that it would be beneficial to sell all of the adjoining property together?
Yes,
to
and that's
realize the best price?
Yeah, we're going to address that. That was the contention that was made by the special guardian and conservator. And in that regard, they called Rick Grubaugh, who's a realtor and auctioneer, to give testimony on that issue. And he gave that general opinion, but I think it's important that what he actually ended up agreeing to is that he was basically just guessing that it might bring a higher sale price if we sold all these parcels together. And I'd like to direct the court's attention to the record at page 35. The court actually asked this question, Judge Grupa. He said, "Mr. Gruba, what I'm really interested in knowing the impact of the MuCal property on the sale of the three other tracts if the MuCal property were not and I were not included in the sale at this time. And I understand that the idea would be more expenses of sale later on because you can advertise in a bundle. I understand that. But what would excluding the MuCal property have on the value of the other property?" And then Mr. Grubaugh answered and talks about, well, it could make a difference. He states, "I believe in the scheme of things, given you're selling about 86 acres plus accretion in Tract 1, that this does allow you to get 17 more acres, which is the MuCal property, of some type of ground there. It could bring a person that was going to farm a larger tract of ground. It fits, you notice, it kind of fits well in that way, in that tract. So I believe it could be advantageous to the sale of Tract 1 and could create more dollars." The court asks, "But excluding it may not have an effect on it, on that 96 acres in Tract 1. Answered by Mr. Grubaugh, "Judge, you're right, it may not." Question, "Yeah, we're both guessing." Answer, "We're both guessing." So that's the evidence that the conservator, special conservator and guardian put on with regard to enhanced value of the sale. It just doesn't arise to clear and convincing
evidence. Clear and convincing standard.
Correct. And then I think you also have to take into account the fact that Mr. Grubaugh, and this is in the record, had already been hired by the special guardian conservator to sell these parcels. So obviously he had a self-interest here. He wanted to garner as much commission as he could. And so obviously he's going to say, well, yeah, we should sell all these properties together. He already was under a contract to do so. And so I think that the credibility of his testimony has to be taken into account because of that fact. We then called another realtor, Richard Wallet, to the stand, who didn't have a financial stake in the matter, and he testified that selling the pieces separately would have no impact. It just basically would have no impact, would not enhance the sale price of the other properties. And in fact, there's testimony from Mr. Grubaugh that his intent was to sell the tracts separately, in four separate sales, essentially. He auctioned them off one at a time. So that clearly doesn't indicate that selling them as a whole or selling two of them together would have garnered any more money. He wasn't even going to offer the properties for sale in that fashion.
What is your understanding of the law in Nebraska with regard to conservators selling specifically devised property? Do they have any duty to avoid doing that?
Absolutely. Or? And the statute on that is... I'm sorry, I'm not going in the order of my argument. Section 30-2656 of the probate code indicates that both the court and the conservator have to take into account the ward's estate plan. And the evidence about the ward's estate plan, Lorraine Miller's estate plan, we actually had the will in evidence. And her will provides that the Mucow property is to go to Cheryl Mueller, her daughter-in-law, and then the balance of the property was to be split equally between her daughter-in-law, Cheryl Mueller, her daughter, Margot Loop, and her son, Gary. And so what also would happen as a result of this sale, if it sold at this time, is that essentially Margot Loop would be converting that property from a specific bequest in the will, and then it would go to any balance of the proceeds would go to the residuary clause of the will, which has that property then being split ways, a third of which she would receive. So she would actually be making a gift to herself if we go forward with this sale. And in that regard, I think that the Supreme Court case of Eggleston versus Kavachitz, it's found at 274 Nebraska 579. It's a 2007 Nebraska Supreme Court case. And I want to quote the law from that. In situations involving an attorney in fact, and any fiduciary for that matter, we have determined that a prima facie case of constructive fraud is established if the plaintiff shows that the defendant held the principal's power of attorney and that the defendant, using the power of attorney, made a gift to himself or herself. A fiduciary's acquisition of a right of survivorship in property, even absent present possessory interest, is generally sufficient to establish that the fiduciary has profited from the transaction. And that's what's happening here, that Margot Loop would have a future interest in the proceeds of the sale of the farm, Mucow real estate.
Wouldn't Section 30-2346, which states that if specifically devised property is sold by a conservator, the specific devisee has the right to a general pecuniary devise equal to the net sale price.
I guess we'd have to litigate that when we have the will.
So arguably under that statute, your client would be entitled to at least the monetary value of Mucow first before that division you're talking about.
That is correct.
Yeah.
I just think it's still of a concern that it really isn't. I don't know what the reason is that we're selling the property after we've already sold that amount of property.
Because your position is there's sufficient funds to provide for Lorraine Mueller.
Absolutely.
For a number of years to come.
A long, long time. Unless we use it up in attorney fees, and that's my next argument. I'm not going to talk anything about what's in my brief with regard to the initial appointment of the guardian conservator. I think that's well briefed. But what concerns me actually is what has occurred after Margot Loop was appointed as guardian conservator. On Friday, we filed a fifth supplemental transcript that indicates that Ms. Loop submitted to us a falsified document in order to get us to pay more money on an electric bill than was owed. And that was pursuant to this court's order on the bond, supersedious bond. That issue has been before the court twice on motions already. And in the first order, the court said, well, Cheryl has to pay all the expenses of Mucow pending the appeal. And so what happened is then Ms. Loop was submitting invoices to us saying, here's what you owe this month. Well, she submitted one where she fraudulently altered the bill from the power company, trying to get us to pay more than what was due. I happened to catch the fact, and we called Mr. Mark Weber, counsel for discipline, because in my opinion there was a fraud being committed upon the court. He agreed and said that you need to disclose all of that information.
That's not in the record.
That's in the supplemental transcript that we submitted.
The discussion with Mr. Weber?
It's actually in there.
This is on a motion you filed here this past week?
I filed a supplemental transcript, and counsel for discipline said we have to disclose that fraudulent behavior to the court. So we did, by virtue of a stipulation that we filed in the county court, which I then supplemented the record in this court.
And that's stipulation with opposing counsel?
Correct. Stipulation where Margo Loop admitted altering the document. That, if I made the other issue is attorney fees, and we're not going to have anything to argue about if she remains the guardian conservator. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
My name is Brenda Smith. I represent the appellee in this proceeding, guardian and conservator for Lorraine Mueller, Margo Loop. Ms. Loop is present in the courtroom today along with her husband, Gary, and the guardian ad litem, Jacqueline Wiskelar, is also present today. This court should affirm the lower court's ruling for three reasons. First, that Lorraine Mueller needs both a guardian and conservator. Second, that Margo Loop should be permitted to serve as Lorraine Mueller's guardian and conservator. And third, that Margo Loop should be permitted as the guardian and conservator for Lorraine Mueller to sell the Mucow assets. I first want to address the final comments that were made by appellant's counsel. There was a request for a fifth supplement to be added to the record on Friday. It contains several pending motions. The lower court's current position is that those motions cannot be heard because of the two pending appeals. That court does not have jurisdiction. We adamantly dispute the characterizations that are in those motions, and when those motions are heard by Judge Scrupo, we will assert our position at that time. There was a stipulation that was included in that request that was submitted on Friday, and that was a stipulation between counsel. But we do dispute the characterization that there was fraud on the court and the other characterizations that have been made by appellant's counsel. In regards to the ability to sell the property that is owned by Mucow, I would like to go back to what was before the court in October of 2014. Lorraine Mueller was a woman who at that point was very asset-rich but cash-poor. She was sitting on a significant amount of farmland, but as is identified very extensively in the record, she had very little assets. There were liens that had been filed against her. There were delinquent real estate taxes. There were a significant number of lawsuits that had been filed against her, all of which is outlined in our brief, we believe is related to Cheryl Mueller serving as the power of attorney for Lorraine Mueller. But in regards to that October hearing, the request was to sell all those properties at once because they would be able to bring more money together than they were separately. Now, obviously, if the appellant has only appealed the portion in regards to Mucow, but given that Lorraine was so cash poor at that time and the need to ensure that her needs were taken care of and that she had the money to be able to pay for the care that she needed, to receive the medical care for her teeth and other things like that, to pay for the real estate taxes and to clean all that up, some of the assets had to be sold immediately. That portion of the order was not appealed. No supersedious bond was posted in regards to those properties. So the guardian and conservator was left with no other option at that point than to go ahead and sell those properties. Now, Mucow is still an asset that the court has granted us permission to sell. For a variety of reasons, we still feel as though we would have the opportunity to sell that. As the judge pointed out, there is a specific provision that would be available for Ms. Mueller to protect those assets if and when we ever got to that point. We certainly understand and appreciate that a guardianship and conservatorship proceeding is not the proper time or place to dispute a will. The last will that Lorraine Mueller signed is certainly in dispute. But for that will that was submitted to the court, it does identify that Mucow would be provided to Cheryl Mueller. But again, for the guardianship and conservatorship proceeding to ensure that Lorraine Mueller receives the level of care that she's entitled to, we have received permission to sell that.
Now, what is our standard of review on that order from the county court to authorize the sale of that property? Is it an abuse of discretion, or is it error appearing on the record?
Your Honor, I would assert that it's error appearing on the record, and to the extent that there are any evidentiary conflicts, those should be resolved in light of the successful party, the one who was successful before the lower court.
But there is no conflict as far as the record reveals, and the county court was aware at this time that there was over $600,000 worth of value in the property, excluding MuCal, correct? And the court was aware that the monthly need of Lorene Mueller was a little over $6,000 a month. So really, for at least 8 years, that $600,000 would cover her needs.
I do agree, Your Honor, that that evidence was before the court, but what I think that that does not take into consideration are all the other issues that monetarily needed to be addressed at that time, namely the back real estate taxes. There were some liens that had been placed on one of the properties that has since been sold that needed to be taken care of, the worth deeds of trust. There were significant monetary issues that needed to be taken care of for Lorene Mueller that go beyond her care that
she
was
needed. How much did that total?
The worth deeds of trust were, you know, in the range of $40,000. There was a lien for about $9,300. The real estate taxes would have been tens of thousands of dollars as well. I understand that it doesn't give rise necessarily to the level that the property has sold, but there are also, as Mr. Grant identified, ongoing attorney's fees. We have a guardian ad litem that's been involved. So I think that we need to look at it in its complete perspective beyond just what Ms. Mueller's need is monthly going forward. In regards to MuCal, there's also the dispute of ownership. We assert that it is solely owned by Lorene Mueller, but to the extent that it is not, Lorene Mueller is certainly the primary shareholder owning at least 85% of MuCal. The company should not and cannot be required to sit idle while this guardianship and conservatorship proceeding continues and wait for that ownership dispute to be resolved. The company should still be able to conduct business and should be able to sell assets if given the proper authority by the trial court.
So do I understand your argument to be that the evidence which supports the court's decision to sell MuCal is all of the expenses that needed to be paid in addition to her living expenses, and not necessarily any evidence that it would be beneficial to sell them as a whole, to sell the property as a whole?
I think that they have to be taken together, Your Honor. There was certainly evidence, as Mr. Grant identified, that they would be more beneficial if they were sold together. But beyond that, I believe there are additional considerations that should be taken into account, those which you have just identified. The truth of the matter is that some of those properties that were addressed in that October hearing have already been sold. So just because they've been sold, that doesn't necessarily mean that MuCal should not and cannot ever be sold in the future, because there are additional considerations that need to be taken into account.
And where does the Lorene Mueller specific devise of the MuCal property to Cheryl Mueller, where does that fit into the hierarchy of things being considered?
Well, pursuant to the statute, which counsel cited, 30-2656, that is certainly something that the court and the conservator should take into account, but that is not the only consideration that should be taken into account. And like you identified previously, Your Honor, there is the statute that if that will is held to be proper in the future, would account for if MuCal property is sold.
But she's living in the home, correct? I mean, so your argument is that she can get the money later, but she won't have a home now.
Your Honor, for purposes of what is before this court, that is correct. However, there has been a separate proceeding that has been brought in Platte County that addresses that issue of whether Cheryl Mueller has the right to live in that home. I would just like to speak briefly on the balance of the record in this case. It certainly was extensively briefed by all the parties, but the county court correctly held that Lorene Mueller needs both a guardian and a conservator.
Let me interrupt. Sorry, I'm struggling with what we were talking about. Is there a conflict of interest for your client in serving as a conservator, given that if what you're proposing is that the sale be forced, she is a future beneficiary of some portion of those proceeds, correct?
She is a future beneficiary, potentially, Your Honor, but she would not be a future beneficiary if MuCal isn't sold, which is what we've identified. But I don't think just because you're a potential beneficiary under a will in the future that you should be precluded from serving as a guardian or conservator in a circumstance like this. She is a family member. She does have the right pursuant to the statute, which that priority issue is obviously addressed in my brief. But just because she is Lorraine Mueller's daughter, it doesn't preclude her from serving as the conservator. That is certainly something that Margot Loop, as the guardian and conservator, has a duty to fulfill her fiduciary duty, and that she not act in a manner that is in self-interest or self-dealing for her own benefit.
But she's in a position to be able to make a decision about changing, really, the testator's intent in her will.
I don't believe that she has that sole ability, Your Honor, because she has to receive the court's permission to sell any property in the proceeding. So she has a certain burden, that clear and convincing burden that she must meet and that the court must agree with before she can go sell the property. It's not as though she's just gone and sold the property on her own fruition or her own will. She, you know, Judge Scrupa found that she had met that standard and would be permitted to sell the new house.
Was there evidence submitted to the court that the $600,000 that had been valued for the other properties would not cover Lorraine Mueller's immediate or near future needs?
I don't necessarily believe it was that distinct, Your Honor, but I do believe that there was, on the balance, the totality of the evidence certainly shows that there were significant financial concerns for Lorraine Mueller that needed to be addressed.
What specifically in dollar amounts are you talking about was available in the record that would suggest that $600,000 worth of value would be fairly immediately consumed?
There was the testimony in regards to the worth deeds of trust. There was the testimony in regards to the MuCal financial status and the fact that tax returns had not been filed for some time. There were references to the Ewert construction construction lien that had been filed on the 20th Street property.
Are you able to put a figure on the total of the amounts you're discussing?
There was not a total amount in the record that was specifically identified, Your Honor. I see that I'm out of time. I would respectfully request that this court affirm the lower court's orders. Thank you.
Thank you.
I think Mr. Grant had used all of his time, maybe. How much did we take her over? Do you want 38 seconds of rebuttal, Mr. Grant?
Only because, in addition, I just wanted to point out that the guardian ad litem is here today, as we indicated. She actually did file a report on last Friday that's included in the supplemental transcript, wherein she also recommends that the Margot Loop be removed as the server at this point. Just would ask the court to look at the supplemental transcript because I think it contains important information.
Thank you. The matter is submitted. We appreciate you both being here. You are free to go, and we are adjourned. Thank you very much.